Same thing with cannabinoid receptors and THC. THC is the one compound in the plant that appears to cause tolerance. That's why, by itself, unless you stay at very low doses, you may end up getting tolerance to it. Ways to avoid tolerance: change your strain, add some CBD in it, take breaks from your THC.
That does it for another edition of Flashpoints. Our executive producer is Dennis Bernstein. Senior producers are Kevin Pina and Miguel Gavilan Molina. Technical director is Mike Biggs. For more information about the show, to listen to or download archived episodes, log on to flashpoints.net. For questions or comments about Flashpoints, you can contact Dennis at dennisjbernstein@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Thanks for tuning in. The time is 11 o'clock. Coming up next is The Food Show. The Food Show talks with experts about what to eat and how to plan meals on your summer camping and backpacking adventures. But first, this next.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
Here goes nothing.
Tune in to KBOO for Drinking from Puddles, hosted by Brandon, every other Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. That's Drinking for Puddles every other Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Yeah.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Thanks for tuning in. Up next is The Food Show. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from People's Food Co-op, a community-owned, values-driven, natural foods cooperative open daily from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m., featuring farm-direct organic produce from more than 30 local farms, bulk foods, and a weekly farmers market every Wednesday year-round. Located at Southeast Tibbett Street and 21st Avenue in Portland for almost 50 years. Online at peoples.coop.
And when you unravel, the secret will travel.
And I'm Emily Becker. On today's show, we're talking about foods for outdoor adventures, what to eat, how to plan meals when you're camping, backpacking, bike packing, paddling, or any other sort of adventure. We're going to speak with Ashley Lance of Fernway Food Company, Mayan Kwan of Dirty Gourmet, and Molly Campbell, a Knowles instructor and rations manager. We wanted to do the show because we both love camping and cooking, and we even go camping together sometimes.
I can't wait for our next trip.
Tal is a master of cooking on fires. Do you want to share some of your secrets?
Oh, I would love to share some of my secrets. First of all, let's start with equipment. You're going to need a sharp knife and a cutting board, or you can pick up a combo of the two, which I have and is one of my favorite things for camping. I also recommend that you bring your own grill grate, as the one on most campsites will have a gap that is too large and the veggies can fall right through them. Next, you're going to need a lot of spices. I feel like a lot of camping food is bland and folks often forget to bring their spices. You can bring some curry powder, some Cajun spice blend, some oregano, maybe grind up some of those hot peppers that you grew last year. And of course, do not forget your salt, which is definitely the most important thing of all. Next, you wanna make sure that you bring your fat. I love coconut oil because it makes everything taste so damn good. Bring a big old bowl, cut up your veggies in a way that will allow them to not fall through the grate. Add in your fat, spices, salt, and toss them all up. Keep in mind that your fire might be super hot and your veggies are covered in coconut oil, so they could easily catch fire. That's why I recommend, when you're building your fire, to leave a cold space so you can move your veggies if they start to catch fire or if the fire is just too darn hot at first.
It sounds like it might be a good idea to have some tongs with you.
You can, or you can just use your hands. You know, as a professional cook, I've spent enough time in the kitchen where I've burnt off all the nerve endings in my fingertips. But that's not for everyone. I definitely recommend that people bring tongs, and I would say bring really long tongs.
It's a great idea to bring some long tongs.
You really just burn that hair off your arms pretty easily. I mean, I burn some hair off every single time I go.
You know what? I actually just got back from backpacking last night, and I was in a place where we couldn't have a fire at all. And I kind of find that I end up in those wilderness areas where there's no fires allowed. So a lot of what I end up eating is like super normal backpacking food, like oatmeal and dehydrated meals and things like that. And it can get pretty boring. I wish I could bring coconut oil and curry powder.
I mean, you definitely still can bring a little bit of coconut oil or curry powder and just add it to those meals. I mean, on another note, I mean, I think those meals have been getting a lot better.
They
recently.
Really have.
Like in the last couple of years, they started to get pretty darn good.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm excited to talk to today's guests because a lot of them have great ideas.
Absolutely. But you definitely like can bring some extra spice and add it to those meals, which I think is something people don't normally do.
Yeah, and you know what? Spices don't weigh a lot. And I think that's kind of the question I always ask myself when you're backpacking is you like say, is it worth the weight of like carrying this? Because you have to carry everything with you on your back and you don't want to take anything that's really heavy.
That's true. But I feel like food is one of the most pleasurable parts of camping. So like adding a tiny bit of weight to actually bring some extra spices is totally worth it.
Yeah, I should do it, especially since I tend to bring some really heavy things. Like I love having fresh fruits and vegetables. So I always bring like whole apples and carrots, which people make fun of me for. But I think a crisp apple like on a dusty trail is the best thing.
I'm pretty sure I've made fun of you for this before. But then when we actually eat the fruit together, I'm like, this is freaking awesome.
One of my favorite things that I've seen is I have some friends who bring leftover pizza when they go backpacking.
I've never seen this before.
It's so brilliant because it looks so good. Cold pizza is amazing. And you just have
weigh that much.
Whole meal. Yeah, in a slice. So Tal, what are your camping food secrets?
Well, hot sauce. Definitely hot sauce. I have several bottles of hot sauce stashed in all my camping gear. I think you've seen this. Like, we'll get there, and I'm pulling out like three or four bottles of hot sauce. I'm like, oh, I even forgot I had this one. What does this one taste like? What about yourself?
My secret ingredient is coffee, and not instant coffee.
Good stuff.
I know it's not food, but it makes everything better. So I bring a collapsible pour over and like freshly ground coffee, and that makes anything possible, including like gross oatmeal. But today we're lucky we've got some people who have all kinds of adventure food suggestions for us.
Yes, let's get to it. Our first guest is Ashley Lance, owner of Fenway Food Company. She makes dehydrated meals and bulk items for local produce from local produce with a focus on reusable packaging. Tell us about Fenway. What inspired you to start the company?
Hi, yeah, I'm Ashley. I am the owner and founder and sole employee of Fernway Food Company. So I was inspired to start this company when I was laid off from my job earlier this year. It had sort of been this plan to do as a side hustle just to kind of make some extra cash over the summer. What was
that job?
I was doing marketing for a brewery. And as many of the large older breweries have been hit just because of the changing times and just an oversaturation, I was, you know, marketing's one of the first things to go. But it was a blessing for sure. So yeah, I've been making food for myself for about 5 years. Started with like the Nesco Snack Master with like 12 trays going, and it took forever.
Is that a food dehydrator?
It is. Okay. It's like if you want to start, that's the one to start with.
Is it the square one?
No, it's round, it's stackable, and it's really cheap and like $60-$75. It's a great place to start if you want to start making food for yourself. And then if you like it, there's room to grow. I just was fascinated by like shrink ring food, I guess is the best way to describe it. I just got so excited about like taking a carrot and making it like into the shape of a quarter, like the size of a quarter, like a whole carrot. So it came from this fascination of just like making things small. And I mean, 5 years ago, like you were saying, the food just wasn't that great and it was expensive. Mm-hmm. And so it started from just wanting to have good food that I liked. So like sprouted grains and things like that. Fast forward some years, I've got some good recipes under my belt, and I've just been moving from making them with meat to making them all plant-based, which has been a really fun and exciting journey. So,
is your entire line plant-based at this
point? It is. All of it is, which is great because it's a great base to add whatever you want to it at that point, like cheese, meat, tuna packets, more spices. It's just a really good canvas, and we try to use local produce whenever possible and just keep it really simple. So it's been a really fun journey.
Awesome. So I know you have a really big focus on sustainability and limiting packaging. So can you tell us about that part of your company?
Yeah. So when I wanted to start this, and I was like, if this is my thing, a good thing happened from my last job is they were really focused on 1% for the planet and B Corp. So I got introduced to a bunch of really great people in sustainability. So when I moved to starting my own company, a lot of that was kind of ingrained in me to think that way, how to do this better. And I was struggling to find, I wanted to do compostable packaging, but I couldn't really find packaging that I felt great about. And so meeting with some friends who were transitioning to like a zero waste lifestyle, I just found it really inspiring. And I was like, you know what? There is too much waste in backpacking. Like even compostable is still waste because usually people just throw it in the trash anyway. So it's not essentially doing what it wants it to be. So what about if we just remove the packaging? Plus, as you guys know, every camper and hiker has their own way of cooking. Like, especially when you start making your own foods, you end up, you know, sometimes you use those bags, but a lot of times you reuse the boil water in bags, or like us, we cook in our pot almost always, or now we're transitioning to the silicone bags. So having, a zero waste option didn't seem like it was going to take away that much from people's experiences, considering that everyone likes to do their own thing. And hopefully in a lot of ways it encourages people to get out more and to not feel so bad about all the waste that they're generating just from all the single-use boil in bags, and then you have the micro trash from like the corners of ripping things off. And so I also wanted to prove to myself that it was possible, because I was sort of like, is this even possible? So earlier this year, we did the Timberline Trail, and we did zero waste, like a backpacking trip. So included like making our own granola bars, wrapping them in beeswax paper or beeswax wraps. And just kind of the one thing that was really hard for us, and we got a suggestion for it later, was we eat a lot of tortillas on the trail because they're so calorie dense. So we bought those in plastic bags. But minus that, we were able to leave the whole trail with, like a small, like a ring size box of garbage from our whole 4-day trip.
That's awesome.
So it's possible. And I'm hoping to do more, host some backpacking and bikepacking trips focused on that, like so people can learn how to do it, because I think a lot of this movement is education, is just showing people you can do it and learning how to ask for what you want, because those options really aren't there for you unless you ask.
What is the tip you received on the tortillas?
Go to a Mexican restaurant and then just get them to put it in your own bag when you get there, like, right, because they make
them
fresh.
Great idea, yeah.
Right, yeah. So I was like, oh, Yeah.
Brilliant.
That makes a lot of sense. It
makes so much sense.
And since we're talking about where to get things, such as the tortillas, where do you source your ingredients?
Yeah, so I am using about 30 to 35% of local produce right now. I'd like to get that well over 50%, but I'm a small business and it's hard to source things when they're in season and produce enough of it to last throughout the year. So I use Pacific Coast Fruit Company when I'm not sourcing from some local farms. But a couple of my favorites are Amica Farms, which I brought you guys some samples of their zucchini that I just brought. Cool. They're founded on friendship. They've got a 3/4 acre property and they started out at Zinger Farms. They're great. Those ladies are wonderful. And I like supporting them. Another favorite is Urban Acre Farm. So they're about a 1 mile farm. It's a singular gal and she does just no-till farming. And her, I can't remember how she phrased it, but so basically she sources like rainwater basically to water her fields type thing. So it's not, her irrigation system is just different and she just produces some really beautiful and lovely greens. And berries and things like that. So those are two of my favorites, but we've also used Savi Island, Albecky Farms, Blue Truck Produce. And if you're a farmer listening, I would love to connect with you and learn how we can work together to use your produce, like dehydrate it while it's in season and fresh. And so that's something I'm really looking to grow.
That's really kind of incredible. So your packaging, you brought some of it today. It's actually these like beautiful little cotton bags, muslin bags.
Yeah, so cotton, muslin, kind of linen type bag. So I hand stamped them. I made the stamp and then hand stamped them. They're a labor of love. So I hope when you get them, you feel the love in it. But yeah, so I was able to work with the Department of Agriculture and come up with a plan to be able to use bags like this. I fill them to order so they don't sit around unpackaged. As I produce the food, I put it in these large airtight jars. And then as you order it, I package it for you and hand it over to you within, you know, an hour or so of it being packaged. And then we just suggest because they are breathable, storing in an airtight waterproof container, but you can wash them, reuse them for like bulk shopping or take them on the trail with you. They're really high quality. That was important to me. So I tried a lot of different bags and these are the ones that I really liked.
Cool. And you mentioned that you brought some of your food in a little bag. It's like a little pouch. Yeah. Is this something I've never seen this before? It's like a silicone pouch. So you would use this instead of kind of the foil bag thing that you get most dehydrated meals in?
Exactly. So there's a couple of options for reheating the food. So one, you just cook it in your pot. Like that's definitely the easiest. It's already built in. You don't need to bring anything extra. I like the silicone bags because they're easy to clean. They're easy to camp clean, you know, swish a little water in it. And just we have one for sweet and one for savory so the flavors don't mix. And then we give them a good clean when we get home. So I like those. Right now I have the Stasher bag, but I've been told that there's ones that have like a gusseted bottom so they sit flat and they're easier to work with. So I'm looking to try some of those. You can also use a freezer bag, like a thicker Ziploc type bag. Just take them home and rewash them and reuse them. So those are all some great options. Or you can save those foil pouches from the meals that you've already eaten and dump our meals in and just add the appropriate amount of water. So so there's some options to be able to reheat our foods and not produce more waste.
So what equipment do folks out there need to use to make your food?
Pot, water, spoon. Pretty simple, just a way to boil water. They're you know, created to be used the same way as the other meals you've tried. You just boil water, add it, let it sit sealed up and enjoy. And so try to keep it as simple as possible. And then we have a lot of snacks that are just ready for snacking. So
fun.
What's the snack that you brought here?
So I brought a couple of things for you. I have zucchini chips from Amica Farms, and those are kind of tossed in paprika and some other seasonings, so they're kind of like a chip.
I want to crunch into it on air and see what it sounds like.
You're gonna eat on the radio.
Is that like an ASMR thing? Everybody listen. Oh, it's so crunchy.
It's gonna be a whole new show for us.
It's really good. It's really, really good.
Yeah, they're lovely. Again, it's just like they taste so good too, because the farm puts a lot of love into the produce before we even get it. And so it's just fun to have like a closed loop food system. And then the other one is my personal favorite right now. It's a watermelon, a dehydrated watermelon with lime and mint. And so it's just really refreshing. It's kind of like a Jolly Rancher. It's just, I don't know, so good. It's like candy, but it's not bad. Like, yeah. Literally, that's all that's in it.
We tried that earlier, and it's absolutely so fantastic. All this talk of food is definitely making me hungry. Do you have a recipe you could share with our listeners?
I mean, I can give you some ideas for things that I think are great. So I'm big on making things easy on backpacking trips. So I like to get things like ramens and stuffing and mashed potatoes.
Stuffing?
Okay, instant stuffing.
I never thought of that.
Boil it for 1 minute. You add.
That makes perfect sense.
Oh, also coconut oil. They have packets of it at Trader Joe's, by the way.
Perfect.
Or you can save those containers if you've ever done like Blue Apron or something like that. And save those little containers. Tap plastics on Sandy. Also a great way to get some plastic containers that you can fill and reuse. But anyway, so I like to do a lot of those things and then add extras, like whether it be canned kimchi or Spam or jerky, or we do dehydrated garlic, which is really roasted dehydrated garlic, which is really fun in ramen, and just kind of add vegetables to that kind of bad stuff. So it tastes delicious, just like junk food should on the trail, but it's got some nutrients in it. So I'm big on meshing those types of things. So those are some of my tips, I would say.
It's the first time anyone said Spam on our show.
I love the idea of having dehydrated roasted garlic that you can just add to anything.
That sounds amazing.
Sounds really good.
Well, tip for the Spam is make sure you pan fry it. I mean, it's the
pan
only
fry
way.
The Spam.
Yeah. And then that fat, you can just, you know, you need the calories on the trail. No one said it had to be healthy. They just said it should be good, right?
Awesome. So tell us where people can find your food. I don't think we said that yet.
Oh, yeah. So I'm doing right now direct-to-consumer basically solely. So on our website, fernwayfoodco.com, we do a pop-up market every Thursday. So right around the corner from here at Southeast 12th and Powell at Cutchin House. We're doing a few farmers markets coming up. So we'll be at the Woodlawn Farmers Market starting September 7th, Belmont Farmers Market, Snack Fest. So a handful of things. You can follow us on Instagram at Fernway Food Co. and keep up to date on everything.
Awesome. So I think we've got like one more minute. Can you tell us like your one secret ingredient that you take backpacking?
Two would be the powdered coconut cream, which you can get at Asian markets, and it's great for adding to coffee, to add some fat to oatmeals or different meals like that. I think it just adds a lot of flavor. You can also use it to make desserts, and then the coconut oil too for me is a big one.
Real quick, what is Snack Fest?
Snack Fest is it's part of the night market, so it is their snack only festival. Honestly, someone just told me you should apply, and then I did, and then I got in, and I was like, oh great, Snack Fest, that sounds amazing. I'll bring all the snacks.
Do you know when that's going to happen?
September 27th and 28th, and it is somewhere in Southeast Industrial.
Those words just got me really excited.
Snack Fest.
Yeah. I want to go to that.
Yeah, it's 2-day, put on by the people who do the night market, the Portland night market. So
very cool.
Should be fun.
Well, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It's been a blast. Thank you.
So next we've got Mayan Kwan from Dirty Gourmet. She's on the phone with us. Hi, Mayan.
Hi, how's it going?
Great. Thanks for being here. Dirty Gourmet is a website and a cookbook. Can you just tell us how and why you started Dirty Gourmet?
Sure. Well, it initially started following a 4-month bike tour across Canada by myself and co-founder Amy. And during that time, the other co-founder, Emily, she had been teaching sixth grade science camp in the woods for several years. So we all came out of those experiences with extended camping, cooking, food, life. And we were just kind of really looking for delicious food while being in the outdoors. So going beyond, you know, the typical camping food. So started out as our little passion project, food blog, which is still online, and eventually became what it is now, the cookbook, workshops, and cooking for outdoor experiential events.
All right, let's talk a little bit about car camping. Can you tell our listeners what kind of equipment you need, what equipment is really nice to have. You have all that extra room when you're in your car, so you can kind of bring your whole kitchen with you if you want to.
Yes, the nice thing about car camping is that you do have a lot of room and don't have to worry as much about weight. We usually joke about just stuffing as much as you can into your car, but the way to think about car camping is just a miniature version of what you have at your house. So you'd have a propane-based stove with two burners typically. Then the rest of it can pretty much be what you would have at home, like pots and pans that are full size. You can get the lighter weight versions of things. That's basically the base of it. Just a stove, the propane, and some cooking utensils, and maybe a pantry of staples to bring along with you.
What does that pantry look like?
What I like to bring, we have a car camping base kit that's outlined in our cookbook, but it's basically the things that you don't even think about when you're at home that you would probably forget when you're going camping. So things like salt and pepper, olive oil, can openers are notoriously elusive while car camping.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure that it's a good one, because I've had one in there forever, and I'm like, yeah, I'm good, I have it. Covered, and then when I actually had to use it, it was terrible. I was like, oh, this thing has been dead weight in this kit for a long time. Things like scissors and definitely corkscrews. And then finally, things like foil is indispensable. That can always kind of bail you out in a pinch if you forget anything for cooking. And then a knife with a sheath is one of my favorite things, just because I want to have the proper tool to prep while I'm out there.
I've seen people like do like a knife in wrapped in like a towel too, if you don't have a sheath that fits your knife.
Yeah.
And then you have
a
towel.
You can definitely do that. Yes, exactly. Multi-use. Yeah, try to think about multi-use things as much as possible. Because also I have taken all those things from home before, and the people that didn't come camping were pretty upset with me because they pretty much had an unusable kitchen for the weekend.
Yeah, that would be a bummer if your like only knife went camping for the weekend.
Right. Or a ladle, like how do you serve the soup without the one ladle?
Right.
Good luck with that.
So when you go camping, how much time do you spend kind of planning and preparing your meals ahead of time?
That's a great question. Planning is definitely one of the things that we like to emphasize a lot when we're doing cooking workshops, because and I've definitely been guilty of this, is a lot of times much of planning goes into the trip and where you're going and activities, and then the food is a little bit of an afterthought, like on the way out of town, hit up the grocery store and, just get whatever you can. But I do spend time thinking about what meals I want to eat and potentially even like in what order they're going to be, of a couple things. One is portioning. You have a cooler and you do have a lot of room, but then the cooler space is limited. And so if you portion out what you plan on using for your recipes ahead of time, you'll have a lot more room in your cooler. And also it takes some of that brain work out of it. Once you're at camp, I don't really want to measure out a cup of flour or, half a cup of onions. I just want to kind of dump everything in and have time for hanging out and playing, not just cooking. So I think planning ahead, find out the meals, and then think about also using similar ingredients across recipes so that you don't end up with the half an onion or half a can of beans that you will probably throw out at the end of that trip. That's kind of important to think about beforehand.
Does the destination that you choose to go to, does that influence what you end up cooking and bringing?
Yeah, it does. I mean, destination and the time of year, I try to be seasonal with some ingredients. If it's springtime, you get really excited about the produce that's available during that time. And also if you have water available at the campsite, that's a big one. So, in terms of cooking and drinking water, and even for dishes too, that's the less fun part of cooking outside, but you still have to deal with it. So I do think about that. A lot of people ask about foraging, and I think that's a really nice way to supplement a meal, but not necessarily plan your whole meal based on foraging, because the berries you were planning on for your cobbler may have been eaten by the squirrel by the time you get there, or they're not ripe. So that's it's kind of a bonus thing to make it something extra special, but not plan the whole meal.
That's a lot of berries you have to pick for a cobbler.
Yeah, that would be a lot of berries, yeah, so that too. Maybe some jam instead of a cobbler would be more feasible for some foraged berries.
What is your favorite thing to eat when you're camping?
My favorite thing to eat, that's always a hard question. It changes by the season, but one of my staples currently is a stovetop lasagna, and it's something I didn't really think about for camping because I would think, oh, we got to put that in an oven. But
lasagna sounds amazing.
I know. You still want the comfort home food when you're camping. A lot of times, you know, it's not like, oh, you're camping, so you have to do away with all your favorite things. I think starting with home recipes is number one tip for car camping recipes. So stovetop lasagna is a great example. Get like a deep skillet of some kind and basically bring everything that you normally would for lasagna, and you just layer it. And the key is putting extra sauce because that sauce is going to sit at the bottom of that skillet for the duration of the cook time. But layer everything, all your favorite ingredients, ricotta, spinach. If you're using meat, I would cook that ahead of time, like a brown ground beef or something like that. And then you cover it, and then you just put that on a really low simmer for about 40 minutes, so you can just keep an eye on it, but hang out, have a drink, relax by the fire, and in 40 minutes, like, everything will be cooked through and all those flavors kind of meld together. And actually, I just cook lasagna like this at home now. I don't even bother with the oven anymore.
So do you use no-bake noodles, or are you cooking the noodles there?
I've done it with both, and it works exactly the same way for both. So whatever you have will work perfectly fine. You don't need to cook any lasagna noodles ahead of time at all.
So it's definitely pretty brilliant adapting that recipe for camping. I'm wondering, when you decide to adapt a recipe for camping, do you test it out at home? Do you test it out while you go camping? Like, how do you sort of realize what modifications you need to make?
Yes, it's a combination. In an ideal world, you're testing everything at home beforehand, especially if, you know, that's your meal that you're really planning on and counting on for that night. We try to avoid, you know, having our guests be our guinea pigs, although they have been plenty of times. So I would test at home, but I think the main point for campifying a recipe is looking at what's the main flavor profile from what ingredients and focusing on those. So trying to bring down that ingredient list from what you'd have at home. Like, if I have, you know, 15 spices for whatever reason, then, you know, are there some of those spices I can reduce from that recipe without compromising the essence of that dish? Just to try to minimize, like, the complexity of execution while you're at camp. So reducing ingredients without compromising flavor is, like, first step for campifying recipes.
So earlier you mentioned that you try to kind of plan your meals so that you're reusing a lot of ingredients. Can you give some examples of, like, things you might not reuse, but, like, using the same ingredients over and over? Can you give some examples of how you might use an ingredient in a few different ways?
Yeah. One of my favorite things to do is for the first night of camping, typically, you know, let's say it's Friday night and you are just, like, leaving your house after work. That first night you're going to set up, and it's not really a great time to just, like, do a lot of prep and do a big cook-off. In that moment, you're just kind of ready to settle in. So I'd bring a big pot of chili that I've already made at home and just reheat that. Or if you have, like, a portable crock, you can bring that, and it's just ready to serve out once you get there. Likely, there's always leftovers to deal with. So for that, then you have chili. So the next day, you can make chili grilled cheese. So, like, grilled cheese, throw some chili in there. It's amazing. Or you could, you know, chili dogs, whatever. You can just think of, that's one way to reuse up leftovers. But also, if there's a theme, like onions, you know, maybe that's going to be a topping for something. If there is that half a can of beans, maybe I can throw that into some breakfast burritos for the next day's breakfast. So something like cheese too. You think about ways to use that across different meals. So that's kind of, if there's a theme, that helps carry it through. But I don't want to eat necessarily Mexican food the whole time, but kind of reinventing leftovers is a good way to do that too.
Great. So Dirty Gourmet, you've got lots of recipes on your website, and you've also got a cookbook. Do you want to talk a little bit about how you made the cookbook and how that came to be?
Sure. The cookbook was kind of the combination of everything that we've learned over the years from doing the blog. The blog has been around for 10 years already, which is crazy to me to think about saying that number. But the cookbook, we wanted to appeal to a lot of people and be more than just a cookbook. It's really a resource for anyone who's interested in cooking, whether it be for day hikes, you're going out for a bike ride, kayaking, and coming back, kind of moving away from the typical just get a goo or a bar. You want some actual food to bring with you. We have an extensive car camping section, which covers breakfast, mains, dessert to even cocktails. And then we also cover backpacking. For all of the recipes, these are things that we tested between the three of us extensively. So everyone tested them. We tested them in vegan version, vegetarian version, and with meat version. So all the recipes are meant to be truly adaptable because it is about creating a meal that will meet your needs, whatever your dietary preferences are. And it was a really fun process, just kind of forced camping and a lot of cooking for a really intensive 6 month period. And we also had to learn really quickly how to do food photography. So that was a steep learning curve, but also really interesting thinking about food visually, not just how it tastes.
Great. Where can people find the cookbook?
They can find it online, all the typical online retailers. They can also buy it directly from our publisher, which is Mountain News Books.
And I'm sorry, just tell us what the name of the cookbook is again.
It is Dirty Gourmet, Food for Your Outdoor Adventures.
That sounds awesome. So we've been asking everyone, man, what is your camping food secret ingredient?
Camping food secret ingredient. I heard the person before me, they talked about coconut milk powder and coconut oil, which is usually what I say, so I have to think of something new. Well, I think for car camping, I like to bring dehydrated hash browns. They come in a little like Tetra Pak, and all you need to do is boil like 2 cups of water and throw that into the pack and let them rehydrate. And then you have like instant hash browns, which are really great for putting together breakfast hash or burritos. And you could brown them up if you want, but they're kind of ready to go. And it's just kind of an instant comfort food ready to go in 10 minutes.
It sounds delicious.
Love hash browns.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you.
And then, okay, one more.
Mm-hmm. One more.
An avocado is also the next thing because that makes everything better, but also it comes in its own little packaging. And if it does get mushy, then you have instant guacamole.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Mayan, for being here.
Thank you.
You can read the blog at dirtygourmet.com. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Food Show. We've got Molly Campbell here with us in the studio. Molly is a Knowles instructor and rations manager, and we'll talk about food planning for longer trips, considerations for different weather, and backcountry baking. Yes, backcountry baking. I'm really excited to learn more about that. So Molly, welcome.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Yeah, you've gone on all sorts of adventures and organized food for groups and just for yourself. Can you just like walk us through how you plan meals for yourself on a long trip?
Yeah, for sure. So so definitely if you're going, you know, just for, you know, maybe like 4 or 5 days or even a week, it makes a lot of sense to plan meal by meal. But when you're going for longer trips, like, you know, a month, 6 weeks at a time, things get a little more complicated. And it is a lot harder to visualize what like 80 dinners looks like, mm-hmm. you know. So in that case, I tend to do what's called a bulk rationing system, where instead of thinking it as meals, you think about it as weight of food. So like if I was going on a trip right now, like say a backpacking trip in Oregon, I would probably think about taking about 1.5 pounds of food per person per day.
Why does it being in Oregon and right now make a difference?
Just like the weather's a little milder and the terrain isn't super strenuous most places in Oregon. So if I was going to be somewhere where the weather would be colder, like a fall trip or maybe up in the Rockies, a place like that, then I would want to increase the weight of the food that I brought, because I would need more more food just to keep myself warm in those like long cold nights and everything. Mm-hmm. And if I was doing a trip that was a little more strenuous than walking on a trail, like if I was going off trail or if I was doing any kind of climbing or anything like that, then I would also want to probably increase my calories too.
That makes a lot of sense. What is the longest you've ever spent on a trail?
Gosh, I think the longest I've been out would be 5 weeks. Yeah.
Tell us more about
but
that.
But not on a trail. Yeah. Noel, and I'm not speaking on behalf of Knowles, just FYI, I'm just myself in the world, but I worked for Knowles for many years, and that organization does extended trips all over the world for folks, and anywhere from, they do some more shorter trips now, but they're longer trips, like 3 months or 6 months long. And when I did my instructor course for them, we spent 5 weeks in the backcountry in Wyoming in the Wind River Range, and we crossed the whole range. And the instructor course I was on was also a climbing course too, so we brought all our climbing gear too and did a bunch of backcountry like multi-pitch routes and just some little like climbing camps out there too.
Okay, well, when you spend so long on a trail, how do you resupply? Do you just carry 5 weeks of food in?
Yeah, no. No, that's quite heavy. I think the longest ration period I've ever done would be 10 days, and I would say that's like definitely the max you'd want to carry. And if you can make it shorter, that's better for sure. Just as you talked about earlier, Emily, is you have to really think about everything that you're mm-hmm. carrying. So what I start to do first is when I think about like an area I want to go to, I start looking at where are places where I could easily access the road again, or where are there places where there's like a little town, like a post office, or sometimes like in the Sierra Nevadas, there's a lot of horse packing outfitters, and you can actually contact them and have them horse pack your food in for you. Or I was looking at doing a trip up in the North Cascades, and there's some other just little places you can kind of dip off your trip and like hit up a post office, and you could just mail yourself a package and then just go to the post office, get your package, and then head back out. And then if you're going somewhere more established, like through the Sierra Nevadas, it's like quite established stopping points for resupplies, and so that is like a pretty easy place to figure out resupply routes. And I try to aim for like 6 or 7 day long food periods at the longest.
Can you tell us more about horse packing? I've never heard of this before.
Oh, horse packing? Yeah, so you have a bunch of horses, and they have, instead of a person riding on them, they have these like big satchels that hang on each side of them, and you just like pack them full of stuff, and then the horse packer person that's with the team will lead this line of, you know, maybe like 7 or 10 horses through and then come and meet you in a specified location.
Okay. Yeah. Are they sometimes donkeys?
Sometimes donkeys and mules are great too. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, but a lot of that's going on in the Sierra Nevada mountains, and then a lot in like the Wind River Range. Knowles does lots of resupplies by horse packer there, and then up in Alaska. Or I've done some trips to, a lot of times you're resupplied by planes, actually bush planes will like actually fly your food and meet you on little airstrips. Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah, that sounds so amazing. Wow. I'm hungry. I have to go meet the airplane for my next food. How do you keep food interesting when you're on the trail for that long and you're like mailing food to yourself or meeting a plane? Like, how do you like not just keep eating the same thing over and over?
Yeah, well, I think another great part of the bulk rationing system is that it really opens up your creativity because nothing's preset. So it would be like, you know, maybe I have like a bag of potato flakes and I have a bag of pasta and I have a bag of couscous and I have a bag of bulgur. So like I can like choose one of those things to, like base my meal off of. And then I'll have some other stuff like some like dehydrated beans, some, you know, sausage and cheese, dehydrated vegetables, things like that, that then I can like mix and match and like add things together. And you were talking about spices earlier, and I definitely love bringing spices with me. I've kind of pared down what I bring now, like usually just like salt and pepper. I love cumin and chili powder a lot, so those are the ones I bring. But I really like lightweight style, so I don't bring a lot of like wet stuff, so hot sauce not so much for me these days.
Could you dehydrate the hot sauce?
Maybe Ashley can figure that one out. Cayenne.
She said, I think it's called cayenne.
Yeah, I mean, you can grow whatever peppers you're growing and dry them and just grind them up, and the weight on that is minimal.
Yeah. Yeah, so just the bulk rationing system, it's basically like you're bringing a pantry with you, and so you can really, like, you know, the sky's the limit with, like, what you decide to make. And, yeah, and then, you know, every now and again, you're lucky enough to come across something growing that you know you can eat. Like, once I came up upon a wild onion patch in the Sierras, and that was so tasty. We just chopped a bunch of onions up and made some lentil samosas with, like, tons of onions in them. It's really good.
How do you make a samosa without oil? Or do you take oil?
Oh, I definitely bring oil. Oil is a main, yeah. That's a liquid thing I bring. Because you have to think, too, about, like, you're carrying all this stuff, like, how many calories are in it and how much does it weigh? That's something to really think about. So like, I'll let you know, one of my secret things I love to bring is Fritos because they are super high calories and they weigh nothing. And they actually have three, they're total GMO corn, but it's like corn, oil, and salt. Unless you get chili cheese Fritos, and then they have like 1,000 ingredients. But the plain Fritos, they're just super high calories and super lightweight. And like oil is another good thing like that. That's like a lot of calorie for how much it weighs.
You gotta bring the fat.
Gotta bring the fat.
It's so damn important.
Yeah.
I feel like Fritos would be really helpful too, because then you could just use them as your utensil and then you don't have to wash your spork.
Brilliant.
Yeah. So you just mentioned a little bit about foraging. Do you do any other berry picking, fishing, anything else while you're on trails?
Mushroom hunting.
Yeah, definitely all of the above, like as it comes, for sure. Love fly fishing. Yeah, definitely. Like bringing your fly rod is just a great another lightweight way to. And then I think, I think a lot of times when we go on like a trip into the, you know, what we call the wilderness, a lot of times like we're bringing ourselves like totally self-contained, like walking through this place and like trying not to interact with it sometimes. And I think in a way somewhat we're missing the point. And so I think that by like doing things like foraging, there is this like interaction that you're having more with the land and the animals and things. So yeah, definitely fishing is great. And berry picking, some of my favorite times have been when I see my students on a Knowles course like find blueberry patches and they just go bananas. And like just seeing them gathering and then like making pancakes, and they're just so happy. It's like it really kind of shows you this part of life that a lot of us don't get access to a lot these days.
All right, I think all of our listeners are just dying to hear about backcountry baking, so
yeah,
lay it on us.
Okay, yeah, so so baking in the backcountry is definitely possible and fantastic. Pretty much there's like two different styles of things you could make, like yeasted, like breads and things, and then also things leavened with like baking powder. So that would be like more like a biscuit. And so One of the first things that you need is the right cooking, like, fuel source, right? So a lot of folks cook on the little, like, canister stoves where you just have, like, the little can that you buy, and then, you know, it shoots out a super strong flame. And I'm not a big fan of those because they're just single use. You know, you can supposedly recycle them, but, like, I don't, like, what really happens to them when you put them in the recycling bin? I don't really trust that, and it's, like, kind of a whole shebang to, like, get them to the point you can recycle them. So I actually really like using stoves where I can cook, it's like reusable fuel bottles. So I like to cook, when I'm baking, I like to use a stove, like a Whisper Light stove, which is a little metal stove that attaches to a fuel canister. And then you actually pump pressure into the fuel canister yourself. And then that pressure with the fuel and the fire creates the heat. And for baking, you don't want a super strong fire. So what's cool about the Whisper Light is you can actually depressurize the stove and get this kind of flickery flame going on. And then you can use your windscreen, which is a little piece of metal that circles around your stove to keep the heat in and not let the wind just blow it away. You can take your windscreen and fold it into like a little tower, and then you can set your pan on top of that tower. So you get a more diffuse heat instead of that super direct flame like you would get from one of those canister style stoves. And then, so yeah, depressurizing your stove is key. And then also your pan is super important. And this pan that's very dear to my heart called the Fry Bake. It's an anodized aluminum pan. So it's like all the benefits of a like nonstick Teflon pan without the Teflon in your food. And, but also it's like a thicker walled pan. So it's like more like a cast iron cooking on it. So it's just amazing. And it's frybake.com. They have cosmetic seconds that are like $50 to $70, but it is a little bit of an investment, but so worth it.
And do they come with a lid?
Yeah, they come with a really well-fitting lid. And then you can actually, what you do is you build a small fire on top of the lid with just like little twigs and stuff. Mm. So that way you have like gentle heat from the bottom, gentle heat from the top. And then occasionally you might need to go in and like flip whatever you're baking over too. But so yeah, so that's kind of the crucial stuff. You got to have the right stove that you can get a low heat with, and you got to have a good pan that is going to diffuse the heat and not just like really burn your stuff. Yeah.
Can you do it with a, if there's a place where you can have fires, could you cook on a fire too, or is it too hot?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. But, yeah, I think it's super important to be careful where you have fires, because they really can do a, you know, cause an impact that lasts for a long, 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 long time. And then, so, yeah, so if I was going to make a yeasted thing, what I would do is, like, mix it up, you know, the, like, flour, water, and yeast, and some salt, and then just, like, keep it somewhere warm. Like, oftentimes I'll mix it up at night, and then I'll just sleep with it in my sleeping bag, like, all in a bag.
Just, like,
snuggle with your dough, baby. Yeah. And then in the morning, your dough's, like, all risen, ready to go, and, like, you can, you know, one favorite, Noel's favorite is making cinnamon rolls for breakfast, or, like, oftentimes making pizza. Is really nice with a yeasted dough, or samosas is like my favorite thing to make with a yeasted dough. And then with the baking powder style cook baking, you know, that's just is super quick, so you can just like mix up some mixes of that and make like cheesy biscuits for breakfast or dinner or whatever. Yeah,
sounds delicious.
Yeah, it sounds like camping with you is fantastic.
Yeah. When are we going camping next?
Anytime.
Awesome. So I want to know, I know you've done a lot of cooking and for yourself and for lots of people. I want to know what's like the most ambitious, craziest thing you've ever made. Mm. Or like the thing that I'm going to think is crazy. You probably don't think it's
okay,
crazy.
Okay, yeah, sure. Okay, so, okay, yeah, but this. So one time I was on a Noel's sailing trip down in Baja, and it was over, you know, some of the holidays in November, so we decided to have a big feast. And we made a giant table out of beach trash and covered it with our tarps for a tablecloth and, like, decorated it all with shells and everything. And then with Noel's, we usually break up in smaller cook groups, so there would be groups of, like, 3 or 4 people cooking, and we just like had a big big potluck with we had like so many different dishes and just totally went to town. But I think that was most spectacular.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. We've just got like one more minute left, so I really want to know, you already told us some of your secret ingredients, do you have a couple more?
I do. Well, some things I really love to take are candy bars.
Yeah.
I bring one Snickers bar per day when I go. And also, I love these pressed fig and nut cakes that you can get at Barber World Foods. They're from the Middle East, and they are just like such a yummy snack treat on the trail. So, yeah, these like they're like pistachio, fig, whatnot, all smashed together in this like delicious cake. Yeah.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, Molly. If somebody was like, I want to learn how to do more backcountry baking, are there any like resources you can point people to, or books or anything?
Do you have a blog? Have you written a book yet? Are you working on one?
I'm not, but thanks for asking. So, you know, most of what I've learned is through just personal experience, and then a lot from my work with Knowles. So I would point folks towards the Knowles Cookery, which is their cookbook. And there's a lot in that book about ration planning that's super helpful, as well as a bunch of recipes. Knowles also has a great blog. So at knowles.edu, you can go on there, and they've got a lot of information for making your own instant backpacking meals, you know, from stuff you could get at like Winco. Like, I love shopping the bulk section at Winco. They have like the most amazing stuff there for camping. Knowles.edu, check out their blog for like recipes and backcountry cooking.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Molly.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So we had planned to have a guest from an organization called Wild Diversity on our show today, but unfortunately they weren't able to be here. And since they're such a cool organization, I wanted to share a little bit about them. So Wild Diversity works with Black, Indigenous, people of color, and the lesbian, gay, bi, trans, and queer communities in the outdoors. They offer resources and programming to queer youth and youth of color and low-income youth, and they provide a safe and welcoming space for their community to explore outdoor adventures. They take people on trips, which is pretty awesome. But not only that, they also provide all the transportation, gear, food, and permits, basically everything you need except for your toothbrush and your clothes. And even for your clothes, they have a gear library. So if you don't have a fleece or a puffy, they have ones you can borrow. And so they have a few trips coming up. They have one going to the Ho Rainforest. It's a backpacking trip, September 19th to 22nd. And they also have an adventure therapy backpacking trip in the Mount Jefferson Wilderness, August 31st to September 1st. And those trips are reserved for Black, Indigenous, people of color, and the LGBTQ community. So if you want to find out more about them, their website is wilddiversity.com. They're also accepting donations for their gear library and volunteers. So if you want to donate gear, time, or go on a trip, visit their website. They also have a list of their gear needs. So if you're cleaning out your closet and you find that, you know, that awesome, I don't know even what you might have.
Jacket.
That awesome rain jacket.
Tent.
That awesome tent that you don't need anymore. You've outgrown, but it's still in awesome condition. They're accepting donations. So again, that's wilddiversity.com.
All right. That is it for this episode of The Food Show. If you have any comments about the show or ideas, please email us at foodshow@kboo.fm. If you missed any of the show or want to find links and resources, you can find the episode at kboo.fm or on iTunes or Google Play. Stay with KBOO this afternoon, starting with Jazz Lives. Our next episode will be on September 18th at 11 a.m. Until then, I am Tal Gaspy.
And I'm Emily Becker. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Thanks for tuning in. And this up first from KBOO.
Hi, I'm Rick Mitchell, and I would like to invite you to check out my program Jazz in the New Millennium at kboo.fm. Each one-hour program focuses on a living jazz artist, putting their work in historical perspective from their earliest recordings to their most recent. The current season features such living masters as Jimmy Cobb, Keith Jarrett, and John McLaughlin, primetime players including Stephon Harris and James Carter, and rising stars such as Grace Kelly and Oren Evans. The weekly program is syndicated nationally by the African American Public Radio Consortium, but it can be heard anytime on KBOO's website by going to the drop-down menu at kboo.fm, clicking on audio, then podcasts, and scrolling down to the Jazz in the New Millennium page. New shows are generally posted weekly. That's Jazz in the New Millennium with Rick Mitchell at kboo.fm.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. Around the world at KBOO.fm. Time for Jazz Lives. Let's warm up with some Miles Davis.